Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com. Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering kayaks, canoes, and outdoor equipment for anyone wanting to experience the natural beauty of Wisconsin water. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
Chris Ware is one of the young stars of the comic scene. His work goes beyond the disposable pulp most comics are printed on. And his book, Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid on Earth, is a virtuoso performance. The narrative jumps around among several generations and covers more than a century. There are bits of history about 19th century Chicago and even digressions on the virtues of vinyl siding. But it's Ware's illustrations that really stand out. His art has been exhibited at prominent museums around the country. Chris Ware told Ann Strangchamps that for all its rewards, making a comic book is hard to do.
I think actually the hardest part of all, at least at the moment, is creating a character or creating a visual space into which the reader can both look and also empathize. You're always sort of on the outside of comics, and I think the very first cartoonist to actually ever do that successfully, in fact, possibly even singularly, is Charles Schulz with Charlie Brown. I really believe that Charlie Brown is maybe the first sympathetic cartoon character, the one you really care about, the one you want to help, that you really feel sorry for and you want to make everything better for.
That's so interesting. I never thought about why that would be the case. What is it about the actual art or the drawing that might make you feel that way? Because, I mean, compare Peanuts or Charlie Brown to, I don't know, Dagwood. You don't feel sorry for Dagwood.
Not generally. No, I mean, somebody might, I guess, out there who's, you know, feels an affinity for somebody who sleeps on a couch all day or whatever. But there's something about comics with looking down at a little boxes, little pictures of little people in little boxes that is perfectly suited to humor. It's almost like sort of a divine perspective on little doings and activities of people that don't really know that you're watching them. And I found, at least at working on my own stuff, that sometimes showing faces so much just didn't seem to work so well because you have all these little eyes staring back at you, and after a while it starts to look kind of insane on the page, all these faces looking back at you. I found that frequently if the characters were looking completely away, there was more of a sense of empathy and experience with it. So,
but you said something about the difference between looking and empathizing and how hard it is to get the reader to empathize.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you're talking about how do you create feeling with a comic?
Right. Well, that's about all I really care about is to try to create genuine, real emotions. I don't want to create imitations of emotions or pictures of emotions or representations of emotions. I want to create the real emotion in the reader. I think most writers and artists aim at the same thing. I mean, the best kind of writing creates such an overwhelming sense of experience and reality that you're placed right there with the characters and you feel all of the things that they're feeling right along with them.
So what were the feelings, the emotions you wanted people to have with Jimmy Corrigan?
Well, it's kind of hard to say, too, because then I start getting into, like, you know, am I turning into an aesthetic Nazi or something? Am I just, you know, here's what you should feel and feel nothing else? I mean, the best response that I can hear about something that I do is it's one person might think it was sad, another person might think it was funny.
Well, one of the things that's so fascinating about Jimmy Corrigan is how complex the story is and how, you know, the narrative kind of jumps back and forth. I mean, there's Jimmy in the current time, this sort of middle-aged guy who's maybe going to look for his disappeared father. But then, you know, you're jumping back and forth between generations and more than a century, and there's 19th century Chicago, there are digressions on suburban houses. And did anybody ever say, you shouldn't put all this in a comic book?
Yeah, I think I told myself that probably about every 15 minutes when I was working on it. But a lot of it was just to stay interested. And I if I have any little personal aesthetic philosophy, it's always to bite off more than I can chew because I think that's what makes things most interesting. I kind of think of Citizen Kane that way. Like, that movie is so complicated and overwhelming, and it just becomes more and more and more to the point where you almost can't hold it in your hand, in your mental hands anymore.
How did you become a cartoonist?
I don't know. I wish I could find out so I could go back and be a real person. Yeah, I guess just, you know, like the way a lot of cartoonists do is just reading comics as a kid. I think my friend Seth said that basically he just grew up reading comics and was emotionally immature enough to suddenly wake up one day in his early 20s and realize he'd been tricked into becoming a cartoonist. So I think that's a lot of it. But at the same time, I truly believe that the potential for expression in comics, if you're willing to put in the effort that it requires, is actually extremely, extremely rewarding.
What were your favorite comics when you were a kid?
Probably Peanuts, I would say. I mean, I've been reading Peanuts all my life. I mean, I read it as a kid, and I read it as an adult. And I couldn't really say I read superhero comics. I guess I did, but more than anything, I just tried to copy the pictures out of them and trace the pictures of the buxom women and try to, you know, remove their clothes with my pencil or something. That's kind of pathetic. Or, you know, try to imagine what I'd look like when I became all muscular, which, of course, I never did, so.
We were talking some about the comics that you grew up with and then how you and other artists have really transformed contemporary comics. Are we just at the beginning, or are comics, you know, continuing to develop? Is this now a really realized art form?
I think if you look overall at the history of comics, it was a real explosion of creativity and development of the language, say, from about 1890 to about 1930. And in 1930, with the sort of quick demise of them as a popular art form because of radio and especially film, they sort of just calcified. They just ceased to develop from that point on and adopted the more or less the language of cinema. And all the comics that were really popular or became popular at that time were self-consciously cinematic, like Terry and the Pirates and even before that a little bit, the Washtubs and Captain Easy, and then, of course, that led to superhero comics. And that frozen language has sort of been thawed out, starting in the 1960s with Robert Crumb and Art Spiegelman and Kim Deitch. We're looking back at the comics of the 1920s and 1930s and seeing where the real life of comics was, which was not really in the sort of illustrated text that they'd been for 30 years. And I think then that influenced my generation. So I think there's more self-expressive, interesting comics being produced now than ever have been. You could honestly say they're a living language. I think it's quite provable that you could look at the comics of 10 years ago and the comics of today and see how it's developing its vocabulary and its potential for emotional expression. And I find that actually very, very encouraging.
Chris Ware, talking with Anne Strainchamps. His books include Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid on Earth. He also edited McSweeney's special issue on comics.